So you can see the query in the URL and then the results that it returns. And this result, or this particular query, returns the first 10 IP addresses in the database sorted by source address. And here's the same query with its SQL equivalent. So the HTSQL at the top is slash IP header, which is the table, and then the IP source and the IP destination columns, and then limited to 10. And I'll explain what the INET function does later. So you can see that at the very least, the HTSQL query is a lot shorter than the translated SQL. So HTSQL can actually do a fair amount for you. For starters, it makes sharing data very easy. At Prometheus, we have an entire group of business analysts, and they use HTSQL queries to send to developers to show them what data they want inside of reports and screens for applications. You can also IM them or bookmark them or link them on a web page. Anything you can do with a URL. The only difference is you're linking to data that's actually live in your database. Less technical users can also figure it out in a couple of hours. As we say, if you write someone a query, they'll go away for a day, but if you teach them how to query, they'll just go away. And you can quickly and easily create dashboards and mashups with HTREF, which is a JavaScript library that I'll show later as well. And we also, at Prometheus, we have an internal application that we use for lots of medical research called RexDB. And HTSQL is the back end to that. And it's used to access and store information about families with autism in the family. All right. So that was after the overview. So the most common usage of HTSQL is as a WSGI web service, since it's written in Python. It just listens to an unprivileged TCP port, and you can talk to anything that can send an HTTP GET request. If you're a Python developer, you can also just import it right into your scripts, as opposed to just running it as a WSGI service. If you like Perl, you can use LWP. If you're into Bash or shell scripting, then curl or wget also works just as well. So here's a code example for querying the Snort database with Python. This imports HTSQL directly into Python. So it connects to the database using a database URL, and then it produces the signature names from the signature table inside of the SnortDB. And it prints out the signature name with signature appended to the front. And here's the exact same script in Bash using curl. And then the exact same thing with Perl using LWP. So these three scripts are not what I would consider practical, because that's all they output. So they don't do much of anything for you except produce queued output. So this is what I would call a much more practical example using a Snort database. So this actually returns all high priority signature events in the database in CSV format, and then it adds them into an IPFW firewall and blocks them. All right, so now that I've described a little bit about what HTSQL can do and how it's useful, this is what I would call an HTSQL in 10-minute tutorial. So if you have a web browser, and if you went to snort.htsql.org, you can actually follow along if you wanted to by typing these in. So anyway, the simplest HTSQL query you can possibly do is to return all of the all of the call or all of the rows from one table, which is the slash IP header or IP HDR. This will return every row in the IP header table, which is actually quite extensive. There's like 500,000 events in my database at the moment. But it's also a lot better if you can just filter your data and select only certain columns, which is done with the squiggly brackets. So this top query slash IP or IP header returns the IP source and the IP destination for every column in the IP header table. And as I mentioned earlier about the INET function, that was written because Snort stores IP addresses in its database as 32-bit signed integers. And the HTSQL INET function will actually convert those into the familiar dotted quad address that's human readable. And if you want to sort your data, you can add a plus or a minus after the column name so this last query would sort by the descending IP source. All right, you can also filter data just like you can with a regular database or with regular SQL queries. So the filter goes at the end of the squiggly bracket selector with the question mark. And in this case, it's looking for everything in the IP header table with the source of 216.243.150.122. And the filter operators are the typical equals, greater than equal, less than equal, and the tilde. Actually, in this case, the only thing I should mention is the tilde does not indicate regular expressions. It's more of like the SQL-like statement. It's kind of a pattern match. You can also combine the filters with and or. So in this case, in the next query, it returns the TCP header rows of all the TCP destination ports where it's equal to 21 or 139. And then if you use the exclamation point, that would be the negation. So the last query would return all the destination ports where it was not equal to 21. So this personally is my favorite part of HTSQL, which is that it makes doing table joins inside of a database very, very easy. When you first start it up, it actually introspects the entire database schema and figures out where the foreign key relationships are. So you don't have to think about doing joins at all. So in this case, it's joining the signature table on the event table and returning the signature name where the CID is equal to 1234, which will return the specific signature name for that event. You can also join multiple tables together by separating them with a dot, and as long as there's a foreign key relationship, it doesn't care. So besides the INET function, there's also functions for counting and returning distinct rows. So for example, the next query, the slash count, this will count all of the rows in the IP header table where the source is 10.90.90.91. And the next column returns distinct IP source addresses from the IP header table. And then if you add a dot limit at the end of it, you can limit the result. So if you don't want to return every result, you can return 10 results. And then if you want to make pretty output, if you add the colon as after a column name, instead of HTSQL giving you the convoluted column names, it's like select as in a regular SQL statement. So HTSQL outputs data in lots of formats, aside from just HTML. CSV, JSON for JavaScript, and text are the most common. For scripting, CSV and JSON are probably the most useful, especially if you're wanting to embed queries into a web page. All you have to do to select the output is to just add at the end of the query, a slash colon, and then the format you want. So for example, the slash event.limit 10 colon JSON will return the first 10 events in the event table formatted in JSON format. And then if you say, or one interesting and useful thing that I found while debugging is if you add a colon text at the end of the query, then HDSQL will very helpfully print out the SQL that it generates, which is useful for debugging. So one of the most common questions that we have about HDSQL when we demo it or give talks is people want to know about the learning curve. And yes, there is a learning curve. It is, in fact, its own language. And most of the time, it's not completely analogous to SQL. So if you know a lot about the database that you're working with, then the curve is small. It took me about 2 days to figure it out to what I would consider to be an intermediate level. If you know nothing about your database, then the curve is as big as it takes for you to figure out how the database is set up. For most beginners, if they have someone that knows their database and they want to train them, it takes a couple hours. It's probably about as complicated as writing a spreadsheet and doing Excel functions. And if it's still too hard, we have both mailing lists and an IRC channel. And hdsql.org has lots of documentation and examples. So licensing, because everyone at an open source conference always asks about licensing. HDSQL has its own licensed. If you use it with a commercial database, you have to give Prometheus money. I don't know the cost of it right at the moment, but it's on the website. For open source databases like SQLite or Postgres or MySQL, it's free. And it's free under the BSD license type of free, so you can use it in commercial products. And as far as support, Postgres, MySQL, SQLite, Oracle, and Microsoft SQL Server, where Oracle and SQL Server are the ones that you have to give us money for. It's also extremely easy to install. The latest version is always on Bitbucket. I have a link at the end of the presentation. And thanks to Josh, it's also in the ports tree under databases/py-hdsql. Usually, I recommend that people use the version on Bitbucket because they commit new features all the time, and the ports usually take about a week or two to catch up. So as far as running, one of the things that I, of course, liked is that it doesn't require any root privileges at all. And you can just run it as a WSGI server. And another thing that I also like is accessing the database, you just can give it the database URL. In this case, it's connecting to Postgres on port 5432, and then the last part is after the last slash is the database you're connecting to. And for debugging, which is what I used most of the time when I was writing out this presentation, is the HDSQL CTL shell, which instead of giving you a browser, or instead of using your browser, you can just use the command line and type things in, and it's a lot faster for debugging. And another thing that's commonly asked when we go to these conferences is about security. So HDSQL will inherit whatever permissions you give it inside of the database. So we usually use it on Postgres. And Postgres, you can create roles with permissions as however you want to whatever tables you want. And HDSQL connects to Postgres with that role. So if you don't want it to see a specific table, then you don't want to give its role access to that table. Another thing people ask is about authentication. Since it's basically a REST web service, it doesn't have any authentication built into it. So if you want to do things like SSL or user auth, then you have to have a proxy of some sort. We use both Varnish and Apache ProxyPass for our demos. Varnish for the speed and ProxyPass for to prevent browsers from freaking out about cross-site scripting, and also to provide SSL if we want it. And the most paranoid setup that I was able to imagine while thinking about this talk was you'd probably want HTSQL to be accessed through a proxy server running with a database role that doesn't allow insert, update, or delete, and is only accessible to certain database views. So you can use views to hide even specific columns from users. So development status, it is mature and stable. We use it on large databases internally all the time now. There are some features that are missing. I don't actually remember what all of them are off the top of my head. One of them I know is a query builder. Most of that stuff is due to be added within the next year. And one of the other common questions that we get is, does it support insert, update, or delete? And right now the answer is no, it doesn't. It's all select only, which for reporting is all you need. So earlier I mentioned HTRAF as a JavaScript library for making reports. HTRAF stands for the HTSQL Rapid Application Framework. It's a client-side JavaScript library, and it exists to format HTSQL queries into very pretty graphs and tables. And the nice thing is that it makes building things like dashboards or mashups between multiple databases very easy. And HTRAF is actually released under MIT GPL license. And down at the bottom is an example code snippet that I took out of my demo. That will create a line graph of all of the snort events by hour by protocol. So HTRAF is a little new. It's only about 4 months old, I think. And it's very functional. A kind of as a caveat, it only does one thing very well, which is formatting HTSQL queries. So I'll show an example of this in a minute, but it basically will only show exactly what's in the database. It doesn't make any assumptions or guesses or do anything to try and pretty up your data output. And so everyone's probably wondering what exactly you can do with all this. And here's the example. So this is the HTSQL gallery that's actually been put together over the last couple of weeks by Clark and Kirill, who are the two developers of all this. And the first page basically has interesting HTSQL queries. So for example, these are the IP source addresses of the last 10 detected events in the database. And then unique destinations for a given source. And I'm not going to go through all of these. This is an example of the CSV output. So what most people are interested in is to see the graphs that it can create. For example, so to go through these, in the snort database, we have the number of events per hour, and then TCP is winning today in the events by protocol, and then the number of events by hour and protocol. So you can see there's two large spikes at about 12:30 or 1 and about 4:30, and this is in UTC actually. So these are when I ran actually two Nessus scans against my snort sensor. And when I mentioned about HTRAF, when I said it would only return things in the database, HTRAF, for example, doesn't care as much about time, which is why it starts all of the graphs with -2, because it has no idea that the output is time. And then in tabular format, it can return, we have the top 10 signatures detected today, the top 10 source IPs. Of course, there's not actually 10 IPs listed here because there aren't 10 IPs from today that have been detected. And then the events by protocol, and events by severity, so high, medium, and low. And my personal favorite part is this is the source code to create all of it. So there's no scripting languages behind this at all. This is just HTML and JavaScript. So I don't know what it would take to write something like this in Python off the top of my head, but I imagine that it would be about triple the amount of code here at the very minimum. Plus, someone would have to spend a lot of time maintaining it. And here's the event detail, which is another, this is another fun part about HTRAF, is as you click on these events, you can see the headers update. So here Snort alerted on one of my queries in the on the JSON of one of the queries. So here's the IP header for this event and the TCP header. And again, at the bottom, this is all the source code for this page. And like I said, nothing more to it except for HTML and JavaScript. And the JavaScript that formats the payload from hex to ASCII. So, in conclusion, HDSQL is definitely mature and robust, stable query language for databases. And it is free for use with all open source databases, such as MySQL and Postgres. And as I just showed, you can replace lots and lots of code with both HDSQL and HTRAF. So if you have web reports that you make and you don't want to maintain them, this can possibly be a solution. All right, so before questions, the reference in the tutorials on htsql.org. And the latest versions are on Bitbucket. I also have kind of a less pretty version of the same dashboard on Bitbucket. If you want to try it out, I haven't finished it in the last couple of weeks, so it doesn't install very well. On IRC, if you're on Freenode, you can join the #HTSQL channel or subscribe to the mailing list, which is at lists.htsql.org. And now, does anyone have any questions? None? All right. It's time to go get beer. Thank you.